Today on the podcast, we have an incredible guest. He's a decorated United States Army combat veteran, speaker, author, and consultant who helps individuals dramatically improve their quality of life with a consistent, conscious application of honesty, integrity, and transparency.
What's a meditation, buddy?
It's powerful, isn't it?
Dude, what the hell? That was crazy.
It's systemic, right?
I'm a very visual person, very. And these visions turn into feelings almost immediately. Dude, I had like, especially when my grandparents showed up, you know, it's been a while.
Yeah.
And then I actually saw my great-grandparents because I knew them, believe it or not. And then I don't know my great-great-grandparents, but I knew what they looked like. And I traced all the way back both sides of the family back to 1555, 56 in Bern, Switzerland, in the same city.
Wow.
500 years later, my mom and my dad got married. The same city, 500 years later, through the world, came together. Yeah, pretty crazy stuff. And since I did all that research, it's easy for me to see them.
Yeah, it's the miracle of you, right?
You know what I felt there was like, you know, first I was in tears, but I mean, they were all like just lined up behind me, just like, it's your turn. Like, we're here. You know what I mean? Like, wow. Like, I've never seen that before. That was crazy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was incredible. Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. And for, you know, the listeners, we, Stephen and I did a meditation before that is very much part of the systemic work that you visualize your mother, father, regardless of what type of relationship you had with them, and then great grandparents and then great grandparents and so on and so forth, looking at all the generations that were behind you, all the experience and that were this almost manifestation of all the things that had to happen before us today, right? And connecting with that ancestry, regardless of all the trauma, all the wins, all the losses, all the happy moments, all the sad moments, everything in between that makes us who we are today. And it's just a powerful way of setting space and kind of opening up that conversation. So, man, I really appreciate you doing that with me. I was,
wow, incredible.
Yeah, I figured after reading the book, I was like, you know what? Steven seems like one of those guys that has dealt with his demons, and you can't do that without, you know, looking at these things and yeah, especially as much as you talk about kind of like self-work and healing and dealing with trauma. I was like, let's do this. This might be a good way to start this off.
It was perfect. It was perfect.
Good, man. Good, good. So I just finished your book. Really blown away. It seems like the 180 of what the current culture is about being, you know, a leader is like some, you know, hard-headed, knocking walls down or whatever. It's like, it seems like a way to carry things softly, right? And really gain momentum.
Well, the book it's basically, if you would look at your laptop, right, for instance, or your computer, it's got a operating system on it. It doesn't change no matter how many apps you download or how many upgrades you do or whatever. It's the same operating system. And if you ask anyone in their life, hey, what's your operating system? Like, what do you live by? They'll be like, well, positivity and honesty. You know, they'll just make some stuff up, right? Which sounds good. But what Humble Alpha does, because of the five sections with action steps, is you create your own operating system according to you and the models that we use. So you have a reference point from which you can build upon. And I have to tell you, even me, and that book is basically me, my life, and then Lane too. But once I wrote the book and I articulated my entire life and all my operating systems, I have a reference point now. I'm much more successful, much more at ease because I know how to handle any situation. And we talk about certainty in the book. It isn't about certainty in the world around you. It's about certainty in yourself to navigate the world around you. And that certainty comes, right? That certainty comes from knowing your operating system. I know if the SWAT busts in the door right now, or if there's an earthquake or something, I know I can deal with it. I have zero doubt. I'm 100% certain. And so it's this whole, to have a certainty, that baseline, that foundation of what we call the operating system is key. And that was actually a byproduct of just articulating our life.
Yeah, it looks like somebody that stepped into their power, right? Is that they're in the position of the family that they're supposed to be in, and isn't taking on burdens that are taking away from your energy in some capacity, that you've dealt with those demons, you've wrestled with those things that are going to pull you away from either being smaller than you're supposed to be or larger than you're supposed to be. I just look at it like looking at it from that perspective is really the 180 of what, almost rather than a humble alpha, like a trauma alpha, right? Is like somebody that's leading through trauma, that is leading through trying to reconcile their relationship with their father, grandfather, or mother, or whatever that looks like, right?
Well, yeah. And it's a shame because we hold on to things we don't need to hold on to. I mean, for me, the biggest lesson in life is letting go, you know, letting go. I mean, my father, you know, and my mother, they got divorced. I was 4 or 5, I think, you know, and I remember some pretty bad things that happened back then, like really bad things. Like I have memories from when I was 4, if you can imagine, and they weren't good memories, but I hold no bars, you know, I completely forgive, and I forgive myself for forgiving them. You know, because that's one thing you say, I forgive my father, but I can't forgive myself for forgiving my father, you know. And I forgive them and I forgive myself. And it creates an ease of communication. It creates a different energy. Like I was back in the States, I live in Europe. I was back in the States just 2 weeks ago, and I was with my dad, and we had the coolest conversations that dad and sons don't have, right? You know, and I actually ended up coaching him a little bit, you know, on this exact thing, like letting go. You know, because we were driving, and he's like, "Hey, look at this jackass over here." I was like, "Dad, why does that bother you? Like, what, you know?" "Yeah, well, you know," I said, "is it going to change your life if he changes?" And he's like, "What do you mean?" I said, "Is it going to change your life?" He said, "No, it's not." And I said, "Look, there's a thing I believe in called no against energy, right? So I'm not against anyone or anything. I use like energy Aikido. When someone comes at me with negative energy, I just Aikido, right? They're gone."
Yeah.
And I said, "Let's just do it and we'll see what happens." And I swear this is what happened. It was hilarious. So I said, "No matter what happens, just take and find the good. Always find good meaning in everything, right? No matter what." And so, and you got to ask yourself, why is this good? You're asking yourself so your amygdala would kick in and actually seek an answer instead of just giving yourself one. And so we literally 5 minutes later, we're pulling into a restaurant and it's full, no parking spaces. A guy pulls out and there's another guy that wants to pull in. He sees us and he waves my father and he's like, "What? The guy just gave us the only parking space." I didn't say nothing. And then we get out of the car and some guy pulls up behind us and goes, "Hey." And my dad's like, "What?" He goes, "You have great taste in cars. I love your car." My dad's like looking at me like, "Are you fucking kidding me? Like what's going, you know what I mean? Like what's going on here, you know?" And I was like, "Thank you. Like you're really doing like full on here, right?" Going to a restaurant, completely full, no tables free, nothing. I walked up to an older waitress who was sort of standing there and I created some space. I don't even remember what I said, but we got a table instantly.
Oh, wow.
In front of everybody. And then we had lunch. It came out immediately. It was like, wow, what the heck? You know, my dad's like, "What in the hell is going on here?" I said, "Dad, this is it. No against energy." Mm-hmm. And then when we left, I said to the woman, I said, "Hey, thank you so much for doing what you did. You filled my day and my father's day with joy. I really appreciate that." And I gave her like a big tip. And she had tears in her eyes because she said, "No one's ever said that to me before." Mm-hmm. And my dad's looking at me going like, "What the hell, who is this guy? Like, you know, you're my son." You know what I mean? Like, you know, because I never had time to do this with him before, you know? And so, yeah, it's a whole new world when you let go of all these things and you allow yourself to expand into a space that's full of love, joy, and happiness and elevation.
Yeah. Yeah. That's one of the big concepts that I've been struggling with is almost like, be careful what you want to be right about, because you might just get it. You know, it's like if you believe that the universe is conspiring against you, you might just be right.
Or, well, that's the whole point. The universe works for you.
Yeah. Pronoia, right? Is the universe conspiring in your favor to say it's that change of perspective. And you always have the choice of either, you know, creating or destroying, and you can navigate your life through those situations. I'm like, you know, going through your book, I was like, this is a guy that isn't stuck by his trauma and takes the opportunities in life and builds on them rather than using them as an excuse to be right about what happened to him. Right. And that's like the beauty of this integrated work and family constellation type work, or, you know, ayahuasca, is that you release those traumas and you can actually be who you are, not stuck in the dynamics of the past.
Yeah. And you know, I love that. It's, you know, there's a lot of trauma in there too, you know, not just the war, but, you know, four or five stepfathers, gun in my mouth, the whole works, you know, like the, you know, punch in the face, all that stuff. Trauma that I never dealt with before. And it's funny how the older you get, the more relevant it is.
Yeah.
You know, people say even with PTSD for veterans, the older veterans are at the highest of risk.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
Because then it's never dealt with, and then after you're done with your career and you're stop working and you're sort of slowing down, that's when it all comes back, right?
Yeah.
And thank God I learned at an early stage, started working on it. You know, pounding out all the. I don't want to say it was therapy so much because I've never had a therapist until recently,
yeah.
But that's for a specific reason because I wanted to try it. I worked through all of my trauma with plant medicine and, you know, animal medicine.
Oh,
you know,
wow.
Some frogs and some toads.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Combo and bufo, you know, and yeah.
So tell me a little bit about, you know, obviously you leave the military, right? You're a combat veteran. You leave the military. Yeah. You're in Germany, kind of cutting it up, right? You know, having some adventurous nights. And what is the catalyst? How do you, is it a friend that takes you to do this? How does that transformation begin, or what's that moment that you're like, I'm done with this?
What you mean with the ayahuasca, or you mean in general?
In healing, right?
Oh, okay, yeah, sure. Healing,
well, like, what does that look like?
Well, I'm a little thick, so
aren't
a
we
few
all?
Times. Took a few times. I remember the first time was I woke up one day and I wasn't in my body, you know, and I was looking at myself from the ceiling, and I'm like, what the hell? And that lasted for I think almost 2 weeks. And it was like, it drove me. I thought I was losing my mind, you know?
Wow.
And people were talking to me like, what is wrong with you, man? Like you're empty. And I'm like, I'm up here, you know, kind of thing, you know? Mm. That was the first time, but of course I was better. I'm like, okay, I'm good now. I can keep doing what I was doing like an idiot. Right. And you know, the first time lost the first marriage and got overweight, worked too hard, was doing everything I could not to think. Mm. Right. Before that happened, I was fighting every night. So I was a doorman in a club. And then I had cocktail bars as well, three of them. And, you know, I was in a fight every night. I was in prison for fighting. You know, I mean, I just fought every night, you know, and like 120 fights in 2 years, ridiculous. And it just all came to a head. And that was 2002. I crashed and burned, wife, money, job, gone in one day. In one day.
Yeah.
And I said, man, so I went to see an astrologist.
Okay.
Right. And she was like, okay, there's a door, right? Can't look for it. It's right in front of you. You got to walk through it. If you don't, you're going to continue on the path you're on. And I was like, what's it look like? Is there a special handle or something I need to look at? You know,
yeah, right.
And then I had this idea. I said, let me write a book. You know, so I wrote a book and I wrote a synopsis about my time in the Gulf War.
Okay.
And this is 2002, right? December. I wrote it down literally in like 10 minutes, sent it to six publishers, and one of them picked it up, and they were in Berlin where I was living at the time. So I drove out there and they said, well, who the heck are you? You're 38 years old, or whoever I was, 35 or whatever. Who's going to listen to you? What do you got to say? And I said, well, I don't know. Let's talk. So they put me in touch with a reporter for the Berliner newspaper. The biggest circulation in Germany. And they interviewed me. The guy's like, holy shit. And so they came out with an article on page 3, which is the best page besides the title page. And it said Sergeant Coon's Private War. I talked about my struggles. And that article came out the day the Gulf War started in 2003.
Oh, wow.
So that catapulted me into this whole media world where I was on TV every day for a year. Different channel. I even did MTV VJ guest VJ appearances and like every channel everywhere. English. Oh, wow. I mean, it was crazy. Yeah. And of course, they started pre-selling the book before I even wrote it, you know. And then it was like this big, crazy. Honestly, like that article came out 2 days later. I'm sitting on a live TV show with 30 million people watching, right? And I'm like, you know what I mean? Like talk about thrown in the deep end, man. Yeah. And that, I think that was really the first, that was where HIT was born. You know, Honesty, Integrity, Transparency. Yeah, the book was on that talk show because I was asked a question. Sergeant Coon, or he said, Sergeant Coon, he said, Mr. Coon, are you against this war? And my head was like, holy shit, I can't. What happened? If I say no, then the Americans are going to hate me, all my friends. If I say yes, the Germans are going to, you know. And I was like, shit, I don't know what to say. I was like, wait a second, Stephen. You got to be honest, man. You got to be like clear, honest, and why you're honest.
Yeah.
Right? And you got to step into that. And I did. And man, it created a shitstorm of, you know, I got threatening phone calls, like people kind of know where you live. You're going to, you know, we're going to get you and that kind of stuff.
Especially that time, right? And like,
yeah.
Yeah.
Because remember, everyone was like, you know, pro war, pro America, Bush, all this kind of stuff. And the Germans were the axis of evil. Remember?
Yep.
So I had Germans calling me, threatening me because they're like, you don't remember the Berlin airlift and you guys, the Americans saved us. And now you're talking against them. And I said, look, on the TV show, I said, like, I'm not against my country. I serve my country. I'm proud of what I did. I'm against this war. That's a whole different man, you know, that's a whole different thing. And so, yeah, that was my new path. And then, of course, that lasted for about a year. Then I went back into the corporate world again. Still didn't learn, right? Still didn't learn. Went back into the corporate world as a contractor. And I ended up crashing and burning again in 2008. Ended up being homeless, you know, and just tried to commit suicide.
Yeah.
With a gun of a police officer at a traffic stop. And that didn't work, thank goodness. And then I ended up in a monastery, as you read, Benedictine monks, to try to see what happened. And since then, I've been on my path. So that was like probably 2008, really hardcore. I did my first ayahuasca in 2006, though.
Really?
Yeah.
So what took you to? I mean, I know there's like four roads that I want to go down on this thing. There's probably 16, but
yeah.
Well, it seems like there's been a constant, you know, struggle between the universe conspiring against you and then for you, you know, on these huge oscillations between one side and the other. It's like, it's everything comes crashing down, but everything also works in your favor. So yeah. How do you deal? How did you deal with like the ebbs and flows of life, it, rather than being as, you know, peaks and valleys, and make it, you know, more yeah. of a, you know, rolling hills of serenity?
Well, you know, I don't know, because I never said, like, why is this happening to me? Like, I never said that. I never thought that. I was like, all right, I'm here. You know, like, this is part of the journey. I mean, when I was homeless, I extended it. Like, I didn't have to be homeless as long as I was.
Oh, wow.
You know, like 2 months longer, I'm like, let me just hang out here a little bit longer. I don't need a job yet. You know, I mean, yeah. You know, I was like, this is awesome. You know why it was awesome? Because I rarely slept in my car. I had a BMW, which I sold when I lost everything. And I got a smart car. So that little box, right? So I couldn't sleep in it anyway very well.
You're a big dude. So I wouldn't think that would be very comfortable.
Yeah, it wasn't. So what I did was I visited friends, ex-girlfriends, acquaintances, like all these people. And I would go to their house, say, hey, can I crash on your sofa? And like, yeah, sure. So I got to see all my friends that I never spent time with before. And I got to spend real quality time with no pressure of having to be somewhere, go somewhere, do something, make this happen, call this guy, appointment here, appointment there, sales pressure, appointments, KPIs. None of it. Mm. It was me and them done. And I did that every night. And it was freaking glorious.
So were you sitting like, you know, in this almost reconciliation of your life? Were you having these deep, long conversations with them and kind of putting things to bed and bringing some of those dynamics out?
I don't know if I was doing it consciously then. Mm. Yeah, because again, I didn't look at it as like, oh man, why is this happening? Like, of course I had fear. You know, I was like, oh shit, man, I'm going to pay my bills. And then I said, you know what? Someone said to me one time, and I, you know, I take to heart what everyone says to me. Like, I your meditation, I'm going to do that. Like, I that was amazing.
I appreciate it.
And my friend said, dude, what if you don't pay? What, are they going to put you in prison?
Yeah.
I'm like, true. Screw it then. So I didn't pay. I didn't pay my bills. I didn't pay my rent. I didn't pay anything. I just said, I'm not going to worry about it. You know what? No one gave a shit. Right? Later, I'm like, look, I'm back. I was sick. I was homeless. Let me pay the bills. I can pay $10 a month. And they're like, or 10 euros a month. And they're like, okay. I was like, well, that was easy. You know? And I started realizing slowly but surely, it's about the certainty in life. That's why certainty is so important in this book. Yeah. Is because the certainty in life carries you through anything. I go backstage every concert I ever go to. and I don't have tickets for backstage.
Really?
That's why. Hey, man, how you doing? Doing a great job. Like to the security guy, I'm like, hey, doing a great job. Thanks so much. And just walk right through. Like I'm certain, right? Like I just, you know what I mean? I just do it all the time. I walk into bars and I get tables and whatever. And I don't, I do it because I can, because I'm certain of it. And I realize more and more and more that the certainty is what matters. That's the one thing. It's not the outcome. It's not the how. You know, it's not even the why sometimes. Mm. You know, everybody says, know your why kind of thing. It's certainty. It's certainty. That's it. Lack of doubt.
Is it a certainty that you have the tools to make whatever outcome be beneficial?
No. Well, no, it isn't about the outcome, right? So I know that if I'm certain of my ability to deploy my genius and my talents and to navigate the world around me, that it will lead to a place which is positive, because I will only deploy in a positive way. So that automatically creates positivity. It automatically creates winning situations. And sometimes, you know, sometimes it's tight, man, you know. And the tighter it gets, you know, because we do a lot of big projects and we like throw everything we have at it, right? And then suddenly you're like, oh shit, we got a 2-month delay. Oh, we need to make some more money.
Yeah.
You know? And the closer I get to that pressure, the more I let go.
Okay.
And I know that, okay, I got 5 days to pay whatever bill, like, you know, whatever, 50K or 20, whatever it is. I'm like, okay, I don't have it. Universe, take over. And boom, it always happens. Like, once you give up trying to make it work and trust that the universe is going to treat you well, because that's why we're here. Joy, love. Like when I love someone, like I always wondered why I was addicted to love, right? So like, I'm really addicted to, like, I love loving. Like I just freaking love loving my kids, my family, like I just women or whatever, you know, it's, I just love to love, right? You know? And, I always wondered why. And then I was talking to a coach that I work with when I had this issue with my separation. And he said, you love the soul. And there's no gender to that soul.
Mm.
And so there's no, it's not a selfish love, number one. Number two, they can't leverage it or deny it because you're not loving them like their person or whatever. You're loving their soul. So they can't deny it or leverage it. I was like, wow, that is so powerful.
Yeah, you're loving the beyond the present manifestation of who they are. That's
And man, when you do that and you feel that, it's incredible. And now that I know that part of my operating system, I can actually unleash even more of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Which you got to be careful, because that attracts a lot of people that, you know. Because I love your soul doesn't mean I'm in love with you and want to marry you, kind of thing. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah,
but I'm just saying, you know,
boundaries and proper, like it's right sized, right? It's like that. That's, you know, a concept that comes to me a lot. Is like the right sizing of things is almost like, I love the manifestation of who you are, you know, from your soul perspective, but that doesn't mean that, you know, that I want anything in exchange for that. It's just I appreciate that from a profoundly deep level. And I think in the medicine, you understand that, right? During the medicine, it's like, oh, hey, absolutely. Like, by the way, this is all connected in some capacity. Yeah. This manifestation of this consciousness is all of us together. And the you know, each person that you encounter is a manifestation of that consciousness that gives you an opportunity to love yourself in some capacity, or the manifestation of the consciousness of all of us. It's like, you're like,
you're talking
crying for 9 hours, you know, like it's just, that's how my last experience was. I was just for 8 hours, you know?
Well, if you've never done BUFO, 5-MeO-DMT, it's all that in 20 minutes.
Really?
So, I mean, I had pure bliss, pure anger and fear and gratitude like I've never had in my life in 20 minutes. I mean, I was on my knees, ripped my shirt off, sweating like a waterfall, had my hands in the air going, just screaming at the top of my lungs until I lost my voice.
Oh my
God. And like just letting it all out. I could literally feel and see the energy coming out, all the demons, and there was like boots and war and tanks, and it was like just like this crazy explosion of purging. And then I just fell to the floor and I looked at the guide and he was like, it's not over yet. And I was like, oh shit. You know? And then I just took off again. And then I had this incredible healing journey where I became, at the time I was still with my wife, I became her womb because she had a problem, an issue, medical issue. I became her womb and healed her womb in my journey.
Oh, wow.
And and 2 days later, it was gone, the issue.
Oh,
yeah.
My God. 2 days later.
Yeah.
That's incredible.
Well, I mean, when you're on Bufo, I can't even explain it. Ayahuasca is like training wheels compared to this.
Really?
I'm not even kidding. Bufo, you are connected to the one. It's called the God particle. That's what they call it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. You're so connected. I saw every soul in the planet. I even went into the universal library of knowledge. I went in there and I saw it. And they're like, you have heard this voice like this. You have access to all of this, but you can't ever know it all. So choose wisely. I was like, whoa.
Oh, you know, man, I'm getting goosebumps. Jeez.
Dude, I've never, ever could I've ever, I can't even explain it. But the most impressive thing, or the most, I guess, compounding thing was the integration. Typically ayahuasca, San Pedro, you know, a little bit, a couple of days and it fades off. Right.
Yeah.
This was like three, 4 weeks straight. Every freaking night I was back up in the cosmos again.
Oh my gosh.
One night, and this freaked me out, and I wasn't dreaming. So I'm sitting there, my daughter's laying beside me in bed. And she sits up and she's crying. She's got this face on her that I've never seen before. I'm like, what's wrong, baby? What's wrong? And she just started saying, I want to play. I want to play. I just want to have fun. And I was like, that's not her voice. What the hell is going on here? And then it hit me. I was like, oh my God, that's me. Like she was channeling my freaking inner child in my freaking voice with my face as a child. Dude, talk about goosebumps and chills and scared the shit out of me.
Wow.
But I just hugged her and then she fell immediately asleep as soon as I touched her. You know, I was like, my God, what is this stuff? You know? Yeah. Yeah.
So how does that journey go from, you know, hanging out at the bar, ayahuasca, and then Bufo, which is, you know, sounds like ayahuasca on steroids, which they call ayahuasca like the pinnacle of things.
No,
this is
no, this is
a different galaxy.
This is a whole different world, man. It's 5-MeO-DMT. It's a 20-minute journey, maybe 10 minutes, depending on who you are. It's I can't even explain it, man. You know, put it this way. I heard harmonica as soon as I like fell back. I heard a harmonica, this beautiful, like just swirling of sounds. Like I had 25 speakers around my head that would kept changing. It was like, and I was like, whoa, like I was losing my balance. I mean, it was laying down, but I felt like I was losing my balance. And then I just shot. And I mean, I shot up so fast into the cosmos that I was like being shredded as I was shooting up through there until I became this little particle and I could become whatever I wanted.
Oh and, my gosh. That's incredible.
Yeah.
Jeez.
Yeah. Yeah. It's dude, I'm telling you.
Oh man, my gosh, man.
Yeah. And I, to this day, I get goosebumps because I can't wait to do it again. Because now I know, brother. Yeah, and now I'll be prepared,
yeah.
You know, because
that's the thing that you can do. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you asked what the bridge was. It was 16 years difference between my first ayahuasca and Bufo. 16 years.
Yeah. No, sense. Yeah.
So I did, and I was thinking like, I got this, you know, 16 years of ayahuasca, San Pedro combo. I'm good. Oh my God. No way. Not even close. yeah. So I did, you know, my first one I did in Berlin with a friend of mine. He was a consultant for McKinsey. He was like in the UK, like this guy was a cokehead and he drank all the, he had like the biggest, you know, the cognac collection on the planet or whatever, just some super rich, ridiculously crazy brainiac.
Yeah.
And he had all these locations in London for parties and someone asked him if they could do an ayahuasca ceremony at one of his locations, but you know, it's illegal. So he's like, okay, but you got to let me in. Like I want it for free. And they did. He quit his job the next day, moved to the Amazon, invested in a temple, helped this guy build his temple out. Yeah. Yeah. Lived in the Amazon for 2 freaking years, got his wings or whatever you want to call it, you know,
yeah.
You know,
yep.
Came back and started doing ayahuasca. Teaching it or I mean administering it. And he said, dude, let's do just you and me a ceremony in your apartment. I'm like, what is it? And he says, plant medicine. I was like, dude, I don't again, like, you know. And he's like, yeah, let's do it. So we did it and nothing happened. Like I was like, you know.
Yeah.
And the next morning when I woke up, I'm like, dude, I feel nothing. Zero. He's like, what do you mean? I said, I don't feel love, hate, want, wish, needs, nothing. I feel blank. Mm. This is it. This is what you were talking about. He goes, think about what you just said, Stephen. He said, you're reset.
Yeah.
I was like, holy shit.
Yeah.
Like, holy shit, I'm reset. Just him suggesting that
yeah.
at a time where I'm open because of the medicine,
yeah.
planted that into my head and it reset me.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
So do you think, you know, I've seen there's a lot of studies that have happened with, you know, veterans and, you know, especially combat veterans or guys that have severe PTSD. What are your thoughts on, you know, people exploring this as an alternative to, you know, traditional SSRIs or, you know, anything, yeah. that medication that they're having?
Well, I would say, you know, nature balances mm. and synthetics are an imbalance.
Yeah.
Right. They always create an imbalance. That's always my belief. You know, we've been doing I've been hosting journeys to Peru with my partner, Lane, who you should have on the podcast, by the way. He'll go much deeper into this.
That'd be great.
We've been doing journeys to Peru for 5 years now together, and we take veterans. And okay. they come and we work with, we go through, we only do one ayahuasca.
Okay.
And we do three or four Pedros, San Pedro, okay. and we do sometimes combo. We did Iboga once, but I'll never do that again. Iboga. And the reason.
Ibogaine, is that?
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Yes. They call it the truth route. If you're sarcastic, don't take it, because in your head, you're talking to yourself for like 12 hours and being a smart ass to yourself for 12 hours.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I was ingrained with. I think they issued that me when I joined. Sarcasm and saltiness.
Yeah, you don't want that. You know, I mean, believe me, I was like, see, that's what it's like. What do you mean? Okay, stop it. No, you stop. And it was like, oh my God. Yeah, it was. So the San Pedro, it's like this. The ayahuasca is holistic, mm-hmm. and the San Pedro is grounding. So it's masculine. So feminine and masculine.
Yeah.
Right. So the yin and yang. Yep. And so we do ayahuasca at night. First, we show up in Peru. We do a day of, you know, getting acclimatized. Then we do a San Pedro nice and easy in the morning. And I love San Pedro because you do it in the sun. It's always sunny there where we are. We're at Cusco, the top of the mountain, 14,000 feet. And then we wait a day and then we do ayahuasca at night. And the very next morning, whether you're ready or not, we go into Pedro.
Okay.
And that mix of coming off ayahuasca into San Pedro, oh my God, talk about power of manifestation. I mean, I've manifested stuff you can't remember. The idea for the book, the name of the book, the name of the company, the name of our other company, our Have Movement. It all came through Pedro. So that combination, ayahuasca and Pedro. And it's always an intention. Like, look, I said, Pedro, okay, my intention is one of many. The one intention is, how can I bring in the humble alpha into the veteran space? Right.
Okay.
And so I took the medicine. And I'm sitting there and I says, grab a pen. And I was like, oh shit. Okay. So I grabbed a pen and I wrote down have, HAVE. I'm like, what do you mean, San Pedro grandfather? What are you talking about? And he's like, I'm looking at it, have humble alpha veteran empowerment. Holy shit.
Oh wow.
I was like, Lane, come here. And we're both on the medicine. I'm like, have humble alpha veteran empowerment. He goes, that's it. Cheers. Went back to work and, you know, went back to medicine. That was it. That's how everything happened. The humble alpha came that way. The book idea came that way. The business came that way. It all came that way.
Yeah.
And the next day we did a video live from the temple of, Pachamama womb temple. Okay. We did a live video explaining what have is. And 2 weeks later, there was a first Have mission where veterans just got together and they did a mission with another guy. They even had swag with a hat and logo. Oh, I mean, it was crazy. Yeah, it was like it just birthed by itself. And that's like the book as well, birthed by itself. We never wanted to write a book, right? We just wanted to tell our experiences and figure out an operating system or a way to articulate it. And it turned into a book. I mean, we literally got interviewed for this book. It was like 24 to 30 hours of interviews. We sent the transcripts to an editor and she wrote it.
Oh, wow. Jeez.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's incredible. It back.
Yeah.
We moved it around. And that's why it's a conversation book. It isn't like, hello there. I'm, it's not that at all. It's just like, hey, you know what I mean? Yeah.
Yeah. That's like, it's almost like some of these things want to be found. You know, it's like you're starting to part the sand away from it. Then it reveals itself to you. You're like, oh, I didn't create this. I just found it.
Well, receive it.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Receive it. Look, everything.
Yeah.
I mean, I, and I hate to say this because people are like, oh, you're nuts. But everything and anything that you desire is right in front of you.
Yep.
If you just receive it. Yep. It doesn't mean if you want that big house or whatever, that that's the house you're going to see. No, but the path there is right in front of you.
Absolutely.
And we just have to receive it. And that's what I like to do. It's like, you can't wait to receive though. You have to move.
Yeah.
Right. Imperfect. We say take imperfect action, create as you go, co-create with those around you. Yeah. Right. And so it's like when you're sitting in a car, just sit still. And unless a car passes you, you don't see anybody.
Yeah.
But if you're driving that car, you're going to see all kinds of people. And those kinds of people are opportunities, luck, coincidence, new connections, doors that are open for you, and you name it. And so when we go through life, we focus on the intention, not the outcome, not the why, and not the how.
Yeah.
Forget the how, the why, and the why. Okay, the why maybe is it's important for some people, but the how you're going to do it doesn't freaking matter when you're certain. It doesn't matter. And the outcome doesn't matter because when your intentions are positive and good, then positive and good is going to come out of it. And when you have that vision, that picture that you plant into the universe and say, that's what I'm looking for, you know that. So just be certain that you're going to get there. Everything else works on its own. And so when you're focused on the intention as a micro, this is my intention, but your view of the world is macro. So that you could catch all these things going by, coincidence, luck, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's so important. I mean, I can't even tell you right now, I promise you, someone in your life that you could hook up with right now and make a business or do something spectacular, but you don't see it because you're not receiving.
Yeah.
Right. You're looking past them because you're, oh, this. It's the same thing when I talk to people, and I'm a business guy, right?
Yeah.
The first thing I ask my clients is like, who's trying to sell some kind of coaching program, or whatever. I'm like, have you spoken to your immediate, you know, circle of friends? Oh, they know. I'm like, I bet you they don't
yeah, ever,
right?
Yeah. Well, it's one of the things that keeps coming up for me is like this conversation about you deeply being connected with your intuition, and that anything that is unresolved takes away from that. Like, that's there in our base, who we are when we're, you know, in the place that we're supposed to be. And you know, one of the things that happened after my first I've been doing family constellation therapy, or been involved facilitating, done it with my companies, have been really involved with that for many years. And one of the things that happened is that after the first medicine, my sitting with the medicine is like my intuition became very sharp. And so I was like, even during our meditation, I could feel, you know, there was this heavy pumping that was happening during our meditation. Like, the field was already created and we were in tune in some capacity with the mother side. It was like very powerful life force on that. So I was like, wow, this is really strong to see. The more I've dealt with, you know, this is one of my favorite quotes, is like, work on your shit. The more I've worked on my shit, the more in tune I am with my intuition. Have you seen that that's something that's happened to you, that through this experience, you've been deeply connected into your intuition?
Oh man. And I mean, I practice intuition. Like, I mean, I'll be driving down the street and just turn left for no reason. People are like, where are you going? I'm like, I have no idea. You
know, when I heard that in the book, I was like, that's really cool. Just like, let your intuition guide you in some capacity and
see what, because you don't know either you're avoiding something.
Yep.
It's taking you away from something bad, or you're going to hit something good, or nothing. It's just, you know what I mean? It doesn't even matter. Yeah, of course. And intuition, you know, I do a daily route, meditation through my mind. And one of those places I visit is a blue ball of energy, which is my intuition.
Okay.
My higher self. So when there's five minds, I believe in the five mind method. So you have your conscious, your subconscious, your parenting mind when you were six, and you have your inner child, and you have the ego. The ego, of course, is responsible for chaos and sometimes good things. The inner child is responsible for fear, and the parents are responsible for judgment. Those three minds feed the subconscious, and that subconscious feeds the only mind that can make a decision, and that's your conscious. So typically these three will feed the subconscious, which makes your conscious make every decision based on the past.
Mm.
Right. So if you go in to your three minds, the ego, the inner child, and your parents, and you assign them a new task every day in your meditation, your life changes. Like, your parents go from judgment to consideration. Your inner child goes from fear to being a sentry watching out for you. And your ego goes from being chaotic to being one who supports your communication. And when you do this every day, dude, it changes everything. And what it means is, I am the leader of my mind. So my mind doesn't lead me. I lead my mind. And I lead my mind through reprogramming, reassigning jobs for those three that feed the subconscious, which feeds the conscious. And so I'm very...
Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
And after that, it's a whole visual. Like it's a whole visual. After that, I go across this field, like, you know, open space, and I see my intuition, which is my higher self, as a ball of blue energy. And I just say, lead the way. You know what I need? Lead the way. I'm aware. I'm here. And then I go to the stage facing the universe, sort of kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I say, I am the leader of my mind. What I think, I create. And then I say my mantra for my life mission. And that is, you know, I create radiant value in order to elevate others to a higher frequency. That's why I'm here. And I say that it's my meditation. That's what I do. And even when I'm driving down the road, I have on my sun visor, like I flip it down. If I'm driving down the road and I'm getting like, man, I wonder what's going on, and distracted or something, like, wait a second, Stephen, why are you here? Flip it down. You're here to create radiant value, to elevate others to a higher frequency. That's why I'm here. Boom, snap it, close and say, nothing matters, man, because it's this moment. I'm going to pan out like I do in the movies. Yeah. And this moment means nothing in the rest of my life. It's just a blip. Keep moving, brother. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, absolutely. I mean, it seemed, you know, like what I gathered from that is that you start by honoring those aspects of you. Yeah. Right. And looking at it from a softer, more a different perspective. Yeah. It's like the, you know, after my last one, I wrote this poem about order and chaos. And it's like the chaos is like this seductive force that invites creation, that invites, you know, destruction and the power of everything, you know. And then order is the scaffolding where I can build my life off of. And thank you, I love you for being the, you know, the structure that I can always come home to. And so, it, you know, like seeing it from that perspective is like, I'm gonna hopefully borrow it and say, hey, Steven, is it cool if I borrow that? Because I'm gonna build that out, because I think honoring, you know, the inner child, your parents, and chaos in that manner can really be the engine that can create action. That's really powerful.
Well, it's from a program called Environment Changers, right? We can talk offline, then I'll tell you how to get it. But it's incredible. That I'm sort of like the unicorn in the group, so to say, because I picked it up in like 2 months and just ran with it. And now when I walk into that tent in the morning with my three minds, they're talking to me before I even get in there. Like they're asking me questions now. It's like, how is that even possible? You know, it's like, cause that's me. Right. So I've gone so far now that they're having dialogue with me, which no one else has ever done in the group that I know of. And I've talked to the guy who invented this thing. He actually invented this whole concept, and he said he's never heard of it before. So I don't know what the hell is going on.
Well, I mean, I think that deeply connected to your higher self, you know, and yeah. all the aspects and layers of who you are. I mean, that's really what it sounds like.
Well, I'm going to say something, and I can say it on this podcast, is when I was in the monastery, right? I didn't write this in the book for obvious reasons. When I was in the monastery, something happened to me, right? So I started having these, like, how do I say it without sounding stupid? Like vibrational outbursts of my body, like my energy leaving my body, like flowing through me somehow. And even the monks were like, Stephen, when you're in the morning chanting with us or whatever, there's like a white beam of light, you know? And they're like, what are you doing? And I said, I'm meditating, and I feel the connection to the heavens, the white light, you know. He's like, and then they saw it, and I was like, oh shit. Okay. But when you're in a place like that, where you have you got to realize no phone, no laptop, no nothing. It was just me. Anyway, so I went up to the mountains after the monastery, and I was living by myself up there in this little hut. And my buddy Michael came up to visit me and brought this woman with him. And he said, look at her leg. And her leg was black and blue from the hip all the way down, and it was swollen and it was hot because she had been pinched between two cars. Mm. And he said, heal her leg. And I was like, I've never done that before. I don't know what that is. And remember, when you're at one with the universe, nothing surprises you. Nothing. Like, you don't have a fluctuation. I'm like, oh my God, like it doesn't happen. Like, I was meditating out there in the forest. I would close my eyes and open them again, and a second later, it'd be 8 hours gone, like that. And one time I opened my eyes, and there was a deer laying with its back against my leg. And I looked down, I'm like, of course. You know what I mean? Like, it didn't even start, because typically you'd be like, oh my God, a deer, and it'd be gone.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I didn't have that. It was like, of course. Anyway, so this guy came up, he said, heal her leg. I'm like, I don't know, just lay down. Let me see what I can do. And I put my hands out, didn't touch her, put my hands over her, and I saw everything. I saw everything. I saw how the skin separated from the muscle separated from the bone. White light came through my crown chakra and out of my hands. Red light came through my root chakra, out of my hands, into their body, and it started scanning from underneath the skin, all the blood it cleansed on top of the bone, and on top of the muscle, it sealed those two. Then it cleaned under the muscle and on top of the bone and sealed those. Oh, and then it went with red light and killed all the bacteria. Like the red light came over and killed all the bacteria. I could literally see the bacteria dying. And then it went blue light and put like a cast of ice over her leg. And then it stopped. I didn't do anything. I just held my hands out. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I didn't do anything. I just put my hands out. That's what I saw. And and we were done like 10 minutes max. And the swelling was gone and it was ice cold. It was still black and blue. But the swelling was gone and it was ice cold. And he's like, holy shit, you're a healer. I'm like, I guess so. And then I went, yeah. And then I went back to Berlin a couple weeks later and days later. And that's what I did for 1 year. Is I just healed for a year.
Oh my gosh.
I don't talk about that much. And I, matter of fact, it got to be to the point where that's why I left, because it got to be too much, because I had this download. It said you have 3 sessions and that's it. Like, that's it. Because once you have 3 sessions, everything's unlocked within you. You have the ability to take care of yourself and take care and self-heal. And people are like, yes, I understand that. Do we agree? Yes, we agree. Okay, we can start. And then, of course, they didn't agree because they wanted it more. They became, you know, dependent.
Yeah.
And then they would threaten suicide, or they'd ring my doorbell at 4 o'clock in the morning crying. And, you know, and I was just like, you can't force me to treat you, because if it's not from a place of pure love and not need, then it's not going to be the same kind of healing. And so I actually stopped it. I moved to Budapest. I took a contract in Budapest for 3 months. And I moved to Budapest, and every day I'd go to the St. Stephen's Cathedral, which is a beautiful, beautiful cathedral in Budapest. It has about a 4-block promenade that goes right to the river, and you can see across the river to the castle. So it's like probably a mile shot right through the city. You can see straight through. And I would sit literally at night about 7, 8 o'clock at night on those steps and meditate in front of all the tourists and everybody else. And I would just shut the whole world out, man, and just sit there. It was amazing. I tell you, it was amazing. And then I ended up staying in Budapest. So I'm still here.
So you've been in 14. Budapest this whole time?
Yeah, I've been in, I have my business in Germany. So in Berlin, I still have my Berlin license plates on my car here. I still go to Berlin, but I was here I used to travel 4 days a week.
Okay.
Until about 4 years ago. So I can't really say I lived here full time until 4 years ago.
Yeah.
But yeah, my family's here, everything. So yeah.
Wow. Yeah. Obviously you probably know this, but the founder of the Family Constellation Therapy is from Germany, right? It was Bert Hellinger that kind of created this movement. So it's really interesting that you, as kind of an American veteran, you were in Germany for so long, and the conflict of that country, and how much, you know, how much came through it, right? Is that, you know, Bert Hellinger was a product of World War II, really, yeah, in many capacity, and just trying to figure out how people could commit those atrocities at scale, and where that came from. So that it's, did you pick up anything, you know, any kind of those movements throughout your journeys in Europe? Is that something that you've picked up, like resonated with, because being a veteran and having that pain and having the pain and the joy of that whole dynamic seems like it could resonate with that.
Well, if there's anywhere that I can call home, it would be Germany.
Yeah.
It's not Hungary. You know, I just don't feel it here. Plus I speak German like a German. So, I mean, I literally, like, I learned German in six weeks without even studying. I just started reading, and it was like almost like magic, you know? And, I have some very good friends up there. I started a political movement, which has now turned into a party. And the party heads are two royals, two of the royals, like one's the Tsar family from Russia, which is the Oldenburg family. And the other one is a Swedish German family, as well. And we, 15, 16, 17 years we've been together now. And of course their story as a royal is completely different than the folk, so to say. Right.
Yeah.
And so hearing both of those things and the different levels of thought and belief that they had at the time, what it was and what it was about, man, blew my mind, you know? I dated the German Kaiser's great, 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 great granddaughter, the Duchess of Oldenburg.
I bet there's a lot of family dynamics in that.
I have no idea. Her mother is the Princess of Prussia, and her father was the Grand Duke of Oldenburg, you know?
Yeah.
And we spent a year and we did, you know, we had to open up every official ball, you know?
Wow.
And so, because, you know, the highest royal, like Her Royal Highness, you know, that kind of stuff. And here I was, this knucklehead soldier, you know, ex-soldier veteran, like, who's this guy, you know? Yeah. It was surreal, man. But that's how my life was and still is, that people say, you're like Forrest Gump on steroids. Because shit just happens to me all the time, but it doesn't happen to me. I receive it.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, I truly receive it. And I can't say I'm on the lookout. I'm just very, like you said, you're in tune. You feel it. Your intuition. You feel the vibration when something's happening.
Yeah, you just follow that in the current. You know, like you're suddenly in the current, and then life is just taking you to that. But you know, for many years, for me particularly, I was just kind of like floating adrift and didn't really have anything. And now I'm, you know, this resonates a lot. You know, it's just to see it as like, and that's kind of the story of this is like, if you are willing to go through the fire, in some capacity.
I would say don't even give it a definition of fire. Just do the work, man.
Do the work. Yeah. Work on
it. Whatever that is. Because some you know, some people have to go belly crawl underneath the coals. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And some just have to tiptoe on the fire walk like you do with Tony Robbins. You know, you never know. It just depends where you are.
Yeah.
And it doesn't even matter because it's all relative anyway. You know, and I think that just being, if you want to break it down into layman's terms, just be aware of your actions, be aware of your thoughts, be aware of your surroundings. I mean, how many times you go outside and you don't even realize how beautiful the grass is, the sun, the sky, whatever. And the first day of spring, of course you do.
Yeah.
But if you live on the beach, how often do you actually see the ocean for what it is or the beach for what it is? How often? Very, very seldom.
Yeah.
And I live very conscious, like, where am I? What am I doing? Where's my kids? Let's connect. Eyes to eyes, speaking to them directly, taking a moment out of everything that's happening automatically and stopping it and focusing on them and saying, look, I'm here. What do you need? Love you. You know, whatever.
Yeah.
And you do this all the time with partners, with family, with business, with everything. And that keeps you on track. You're like, wait a second. Something feels off. What is it? And then you just look around, you go, okay, I'm not in congruency with my integrity right now. I'm doing something I shouldn't be doing, or I don't believe in this, or why am I doing, you know, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And slowly but surely you're informing yourself and you're articulating your operating system then. You know, what this does, the book does, Unleash Humble Alpha, gives you a turbo boost to get in there.
Yeah. No,
and, by the way, the book has been picked up by Forbes School of Business Management as curriculum for 2 credit hours. And now Harvard and Stanford won it. We just can't agree on a commission split. You know, on a revenue split, they want, you know, more than we want to give. But Harvard and Stanford,
yeah.
I mean, what, you know what I mean? Like, we're like, what? We're two grunts. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? How's that even possible? You know, but again, it doesn't matter because we had an intention and we focused on that intention. We didn't focus on the how or the what. Our intention was, first it was to reach as many people as possible to change a paradigm of what leadership really means. And now it's a billion people. And we just got picked up for an international executive MBA. So we're going to be part of that. Looking at the British BA system, the British bachelor's system as well. They want to pick it up for that. And then we have the Middle Eastern or the Far Eastern MBA program for corporations also. We're going to reach a billion people with the Humble Alpha.
Jeez. Yeah.
I know.
It sounds like the power of what you can achieve if you're deeply connected with resonance, whatever that looks like. Yeah.
Yeah. And again, it's let go of how you're going to do it. Let go of what it is. Because look, if I said I want to reach a billion people, okay, let's map it out. Okay. 350,000 people on Facebook. It's like, come on, you know, you can't know that. How am I supposed to know that universities like the book because it's a 5-step system kind of thing, you know, I didn't know. You know, it just happened, but it happened because I was open and receiving. And I met this woman named Julie, and she happens to write college courses. She was a dean of 20 universities. And she's like, I can turn that into a course for him. I'm like, do it. She did. And since then it's just,
wow.
Yeah.
The thing that I got most from it is like how deeply authentic it is. You know, it's like, this is, and what I've heard you speak, and, you know, that's kind of how we connected, is like through Clubhouse, is like how deeply authentic you are. You know, it's like, that's really cool to say, this isn't a show anymore. I'm deeply authentic. I'm connected to source. I'm, you know, connected to that God particle in whatever capacity that looks like, but it's like, I'm deeply connected to everything.
And I, you know, people say that to me all the time in Clubhouse. It brings me to tears almost every time I have a segment. I have a segment 5:30 on Tuesday, 5:30 Eastern on Tuesdays for an hour. And typically I don't even know what I'm going to say until I show up, because I just create space. Right. And at the end, I just get all these compliments, you know, and it's like, oh my God, you made it. And I'm just like, wow, this is a trip, man, because I'm not doing anything other than expressing my true feelings and thoughts and move what moves me.
Yeah.
And then I realize that our world is so, not that.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like,
yeah. Yeah.
And that's why. So it's incredibly humbling. And these experiences when this stuff like it happens, it's crazy, man. I just, even to be able to sit here and talk with you, you don't have many conversations like this. So I appreciate this.
No, of course, man. I think that collectively moving this in a way that we can resolve unresolved trauma in systems is the way to step into your power, man. And this has been incredible conversation. I really appreciate it. I know you've got a hard stop, so I want to be respectful of your time. But man, I hope we could do this many times again in the future.
Well, you know, if I could touch upon something, we have the new project, and we have the HAVE movement, which is Humble Alpha Veteran Empowerment. We have the Vetpreneur Tribe, which is a Facebook group. We have the Warrior Council, which is a consulting group. We have live missions, HAVE missions, live events, you name it. And now we started this HAVE NFT ecosystem, where we're bringing everything together under one roof. And the HAVE NFT ecosystem has an aspect digital and real life, and the real life and digital both overlap with a veteran healing. Yeah. So we had our last event in Houston. Yeah, we had our last live event in Houston, and we had a healing symposium on the last day, which was the third day. It was free for everyone. And we had, I think, 7 or 8 different practitioners there with different modalities. We had ketamine, we had sound healing, we had tapping therapy, and all that kind of stuff. And so all the veterans listened to what they said, and afterwards they could meet with them and try it out, not ketamine, but you know, other try it out, you know, and you know, set appointments or whatever. And we're taking that into the metaverse as well, where you can have virtual healing centers. And of course, we're building out the real healing symposiums as well into the real world. And we're dropping profits from the NFT into 100 nonprofits for veterans. Because as you know, 22 veterans a day, you know, committing suicide is unacceptable, especially after people have been working on it for 20 years. Yeah. So we're not creating the wheel, anything new. We're consolidating what's already out there to have more of an impact. And we're doing that through the sale of challenge coins in the NFT form, right? So that's HAVE-NFT.com. Check it out. Read the white paper. The white paper is basically explaining what the project's about. It's real. It's not just a digital thing. It's real. It's got impact. And we're going to be helping a lot of veterans and their families along the way as well. So yeah, it's a great opportunity to be able to serve again, you know, really in this capacity. And then we have coming after that, the investment fund that's going to launch as well. So we can help veteran business owners scale their companies and grow and hedge that with real estate.
So if somebody wants to get a hold of you, will they do that? How do they reach out?
Stephen@humblealpha.com.
Perfect.
There you go.
Ladies and gentlemen, Stephen Kuhn and Lane Ballone, Humble Alpha. Great, great, great movie. Great book, excuse me. Really.
You just started a manifestation, man. Thank you.
Man, your life could be a movie. I'd get that every single time. So that's great. Thanks so much, brother. I really appreciate
it. Brother.
God bless, man.
Amen.
Yeah, I was seeing the jets fly.
Oh, yeah.
That's pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah. I thought that was pretty cool. Yeah, it was. I didn't one know time, that. I didn't realize that the Fort Lauderdale Air Show was happening today.
I didn't either.
Yeah.
Until I saw those four planes, like.
Yeah. When I was in the military, that was like the best gig is to work the air show. Mm-hmm. And you'd just be like, you know, working the air show and, you know, you'd have access to everything. It was pretty cool. Yeah. Yeah. But hey, man, I just wanted to say thank you for coming. This has been really amazing. I've just learned a lot. And it's so cool how much this, you know, kind of relates to each other on the conversation. It's really, really, really powerful.
Well, we have to be very, very thankful for you. You know, I tell you, you know, there's a lot of MVPs in the world. One thing I know for sure is that the message and the exchange and the sharing that we did today, it'll be beneficial to those who catch it just because of the vibration of it, I'm sure.
Yeah.
But I want to thank you for your stance because I have to be quite honest. There's not a whole lot of individuals that are willing to have the necessary conversations. There's not even a whole lot of individuals, either black or white, you know, that are willing to talk about the root causes of our trauma and the role that slavery has played into it and those kind of things. Yeah. So your willingness and your courageousness, it was a book called Fierce Conversations, just being able to have those.
Yeah.
Come to find out that we have more in common than we realize. And I want to thank you as well for your edification of the work of the Circle of Brotherhood.
Yeah, it's just I'm really in awe. And you know, like you know, people in the law of attraction world say like attracts like. So like the similar minds and this is just simpatico and at many levels. So, you know, I really appreciate what you guys do and you coming out here today. And I know this is I still can't believe I'm still trying to pinch myself because it seemed like such a far world away at the beginning of this thing. And now, you know, I consider you a friend, you know.
Likewise.
What I mean? It's like, it's really cool to kind of build that relationship out of this thing and, you know, keep at it is kind of the lesson of this whole thing. It's just like, keep at it, you'll get to somewhere,
right.
You know? And so, just for people out there, how can they get a hold of you? Get involved, what would be the website or is there?
Excellent. You know, and I tell everyone, first of all, the very first thing you should do is to go to the website, www.circleofbrotherhoodmiami.org. Okay. Circleofbrotherhoodmiami.org. Contact information, everything you need is right there on our website. If you live in the area, feel free. We're located at 5120 Northwest 24th Avenue. Appropriately named the Dr. Dorothy Bendros Mendigo Social and Economic Institute.
Awesome.
And so that's where we can be found. Again, www.circleofbrotherhood.org.
Okay,
and my name is Brother Lyle Muhammad. I have the honor of serving as the executive director of the Circle of Brotherhood. And we're open. We're open to anything that can make our communities a decent place to live.
It's been really a pleasure having you, and it's been a world of understanding and how much, you know, we've come together on this thing and how related it all is. And it's indeed really, really powerful. Thank you very much. And
it is definitely the next wave of education.
Yeah, exactly.
We're out in front.
All right. Thanks, man. Appreciate it. Mine.